bringing you inside the latest stories in sports business and advice from some of the best in the industry. This is BSSF's Sports Business Podcast, presented by the Business of Sports Society at Fordham. Welcome into episode 6 of BSSF Sports Business Podcast. Happy to be back with Alex Waltz, and we are going to be having our second interview of our podcast today with Kenny Pordon. He was the XFL's marketing director for the 2 years that the league was around. If you remember about the XFL, they were doing great before they had to shut down operations this past April because of the pandemic, and kind of really disappointing to see that had to happen. Of course, there was no way that a league 5 games in was going to survive not having a full season, but really it was on the path to success. And Kenny was really one of the architects and engineers behind the whole marketing scheme that put the XFL in the spotlight, especially with such great broadcast partners at Fox and ESPN. So it'll be great to hear about his experience there. And he had over a decade of experience at the NFL as well.
It's interesting because you think about sports are very exciting now, obviously, with everything going on. But like 2 years ago, there wasn't really the same excitement. And then the XFL comes in, and this is something new. It's something different. And whether you're a fan of it or not, it's just exciting to have something new in sports. And I think a lot of people were really entertained by that possibility of this is something new. It's fresh. It's unique. And it's got a bright future ahead. Unfortunately, the pandemic put that to an end like it did so many other things. And still, though, a lot of that hard work that Kenny put in from his years at the NFL and from his first few years at the XFL really shows, and a lot of impressive things and a lot of terrific insights that from you, you know, in the business world and me outside of it, I think we can all take something really, really positive away from it.
And especially because it filled the void. You talk about, you know, that second half after the Super Bowl, you know, that whole spring period where there's not really much football of any kind. The XFL filled that void, and it was doing a great job of it. They launched the day or the week after the Super Bowl finished. So it was pretty much a seamless transition into the next following Sunday and Saturday. It was perfect for fans that were starved for more football content. You know, week one, they had over 4 million viewers, and then they were averaging around 2 million. It was perfect for football fans, and especially specific markets that were maybe lacking football. They didn't, their NFL team left, like St. Louis, or, you know, where it's kind of more expensive to go to a professional football game, take LA, New York. They really filled a void, whether that be on television for football fans, in specific markets for particular fans in those markets, that I think was really drove the XFL to be so successful.
Yeah, I feel like it's the ultimate what could have been in sports because, you know, those 5 games in,
absolutely,
I think there was a bright future. Unfortunately, it didn't pan out, but regardless, so much experience, so much knowledge taken away from that for Kenny. And I think we're both really excited to hear what more he has to say about that.
And for the new owners, Dwayne Johnson and Danny Garcia, it's going to be even their model, the old XFL model from this past year, is going to most likely be the model going forward. That it worked so well, at least in my opinion, I don't know why you'd want to change that because everything up to that point had been successful. So it should be interesting to see what the new owners do going forward. That'll be brought back spring 2022. But for now, we can reflect on what happened with the current XFL and the way it all played out. And like you said, it's going to be the biggest what could have been. And potentially what could be, because it's coming back spring 2022.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, Kenny's got so much experience beyond that, and I think he's going to share all that with us, and we're really excited to hear it.
And with that, we want to welcome in Kenny Pordon, who is a Fordham alum, and he is here with us tonight. He, his last role, most recent role, was with the XFL. He was the marketing director there, and we are so happy to have him tonight. Kenny, welcome in.
Thanks so much for having me, Nicholas. Really always a pleasure to talk with, you know, Fordham students. Going to the school from 2003 to 2007 was definitely a great opportunity for me. Learned a lot about sports media working at WFUV, and definitely appreciative to speak with you here tonight.
For sure, for sure. So, as you mentioned, you were here from 2003 to 2007. You know, we'll start with this about the impact Fordham had on you. How did Fordham prepare you, influence you to want to work in sports business?
Sure. So I think the seed that Fordham planted in me, which I think it plants in every single student, is a thirst for learning, a thirst to know more about the world, to be curious. And definitely in the times we live in now, I think that's an extraordinary asset, because the business world, the only constant is change, and constantly what businesses are looking for is adaptability and agility. And I think that that's something that Fordham really teaches well. As far as the sports business, I think I really, you know, gained a love for it being at Fordham, especially getting to work at WFUV. I grew up in Paramus, New Jersey, just across the river, with a love of sports and all sports, and really being able to watch various different, you know, leagues, whether it be professional or college conferences on TV. And it really was something that consumed me at a very young age that I wanted to pursue. And I knew Fordham was a great opportunity to do that in the broadcasting world. But, you know, being able to work under the executive producer of WFUV Sports at the time, Bob Ahrens, he really taught me a lot about sports business and really let me know kind of the decisions that would be made in building a radio station, building our department. And that side of it was actually a lot more interesting to me than the side of it of being on air. And then the other thing I was able to notice is every time I would go to cover, you know, a Mets game or a Giants game, Devils or Nets, which were kind of the main teams that were under my portfolio at the time, of teams that I covered, I always saw on the opposite side of that, you know, really hardworking, dedicated public relations officials. So, you know, to me, that was kind of also a great intro into the sports business overall. And then also with, you know, just your fellow sports media and kind of the drive that they had to be successful in their profession. I think those experiences really taught me at an early age in my career or a young age in my career, kind of what it takes to be successful, you know, in the industry. And I think that that experience at both WFUV, but Fordham at large, was really helpful for me when I arrived at the NFL.
And you talk about WFUV. I'm currently there now. I know Nick spent some time there as well. So we all have experience there in some sense. And you talked about getting that experience and then ultimately moving over to public relations. So what was that transition like for you? Was there any sort of skills that you mentioned there that you took from FUV going into your first year with the NFL? What was that kind of transition process like?
Yeah, no, it was really helpful for me as far as WFUV to really have a good understanding of the sports industry. But I think I hadn't really done a lot of internships outside of WFUV, other than a really short stint with ABC TV at the time on the publicity department, which was really helpful just to kind of get in an office setting. But then going to the NFL, which is such an accomplished brand, and just seeing how the way professionals in the public relations department carried themselves, how the broader people in the organization and leadership carried themselves, I think that was really helpful for me to see, just to better understand that from kind of a business in a corporate setting. And, you know, not to at all, you know, say anything negative about FUV, it's just a different style of doing work. FUV is obviously a little bit more casual, a little bit more laid back. When I was at the XFL most recently, we had a very similar style of FUV, so it kind of felt familiar to go back to sort of that environment, and similar as well at CBS Interactive. So that was something that, you know, I kind of learned right off the bat. The other thing was just understanding kind of what key decision makers at the top of the organization are really looking at as far as, you know, public relations, brand, and that type of material. And that was kind of my first role coming out of Fordham, was to build out the press clippings that would go across the league. So, you know, what are key decision makers? What are decision makers within the league really looking at day to day as far as the information flow of what they're expecting to learn about the company? And I think that was a great first position to have coming out of, you know, WFUV and going into a business, because I've always had a good sense of, you know, from a public relations and just a brand health standpoint, you know, really how media reports and news in general kind of impact, you know, corporations overall. So I think it was really helpful for me to have that experience in a very young stage of my career.
Definitely. And I know from the time that I spent at FUB, I got to spend about a half year with Bob Ahrens, and that experience was unlike any other. And I'm so thankful even for just those 4 months of time that I got to spend with him and learn from him. A lot of your experience has been on the digital media side in the marketing industry. So how important do you think that digital aspect is in today's ever growing digital world?
Sure. No, I obviously digital media experience and digital marketing experience is crucial if you're going to really do anything, you know, within the marketing realm, because everything today is digital. Even, you know, the last role I had in the XFL was very much involved in working with our creative services team. And even, you know, creative services or what you would technically think is traditional marketing, every asset you're dealing with is digital. So you have to understand, you know, what the parameters are for creative assets with Facebook and Twitter and programmatic and all these different, you know, formats that you need to build out in order to execute a digital marketing campaign. So, you know, I think digital marketing is clearly the output of what marketing is today. It's kind of, you know, where the marketing lives, so to speak. So yes, there's still, you know, print and traditional billboards and television as well, and radio, which are very important to your integrated marketing mix. But obviously all those are also, you know, to a degree digital as well. Even at a home, there's digital billboards now. So everything has a digital language to it. So I think that that's just naturally kind of the platform or the canvas that you're working with. I think what you do with that canvas or digital marketing overall really comes back to traditional marketing tactics. It's understanding your consumer. It's understanding, you know, how your brand fits in the overall ecosystem of other brands, and really the value proposition that you can provide to consumers, which is really key to your point in a very, really complex world and a really crowded marketplace. If you don't know what you're about and you know what you stand for and you don't know the value you bring to your consumer, you're not going to last very long or you're going to erode as a brand. I think that's so important today to really make sure that your brand is as out there and really is something that the consumers really understand what it's about. Otherwise, it can get very, very easily lost in the shuffle. And I think, you know, in the sports world, we're starting to see that more and more. Like, the big four are always the big, you know, the big four, and they're always going to have a high impact on consumers and fans. But there's so many other brands and leagues that are out there that are trying to get market share and trying to build up their profile. And it's never been easier before for more fledgling brands in kind of niche sports like rugby and lacrosse to find an audience through digital tools and digital media. So I think it just makes you have to be even more sharper if you're at one of those top four brands.
And you talk about market share and you talk about digital, and that naturally my mind then goes to fans, because fans are such an integral part of both the digital experience. And especially now, I think during COVID, when we don't have fans, particularly for the NFL, which is where you spent so much of your time working for over a decade, pretty much. So what are some of those digital initiatives that you took with the NFL that were particularly successful, or things that you've seen maybe during these past few months that you also think the league has done that are successful, and just overall navigating this kind of landscape where digital has become so important?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So basically, the team that we had was fan development and marketing strategy. And really the role of that team was to develop the fan base for the league. So we looked across the 5 to 95 NFL fan base and saw, you know what, 35 to 55 year olds, we were doing really well in. So naturally, you're going to lean a lot on your partners, NBC, Fox Sports, CBS, you know, as far as our partnerships overall, and really we look at where, as far as the NFL, we can have the most impact as far as our marketing budget and our marketing assets. And like any marketing team, you're always going to have a limited amount of budget to work with. So you have to make really strategic decisions on how much you can, what impact can you have with limited resources? That's always, you know, naturally what you're dealing with as a marketer. So for us, we really saw an opportunity both for an emerging band fan base, 6 to 18, and then basically 18 to 34, which we thought was an opportunity fan base, meaning that, you know, we knew it was so important, but we also knew that we had to be laser focused on that fan base. Otherwise, with all the competition out there, it might not have the same avidity levels that our 35 to 55 year old fan base did, just because it's so easy to not be as avid of an NFL fan as it was maybe 10 or 15 years ago, because there's so much competition. So kind of very different challenges. And I think what the NFL has done really well, you know, since I've actually left in my tenure in 2018, is continue to expand YouTube, continue to expand its social offerings, and all that shoulder programming that's done to really build up hype for the game and continue to provide a high interest in games that are coming up. I think the hardest thing the NFL has to do over the next 5 years is figure out how to create a new wave of stars. Like, the highest rated games this year have been, you know, when you're looking at Green Bay versus Tampa Bay, because you have Rodgers and Brady, or Tampa Bay versus New Orleans Saints, because you have Drew Brees versus, you know, Tom Brady, you know, when those stars start to retire, you know, Roethlisberger, Brees, Brady, Rodgers, you know, that next set of stars, and you're seeing it right now with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, they play each other on Monday night, but it just wasn't the same sort of ratings that you were used to seeing the two top quarterbacks of the league produce for the NFL. When there was Manning versus, you know, Brady, those ratings were a lot higher 5 years ago. So, you know, I think that naturally a lot of that's just because less people are obviously engaged with linear TV, and that's just a natural problem that sports is facing. But still, how do you work within the current framework to make sure that those stars are getting those platforms to really build up to be that next generation of stars? And like I said, it's really challenging when you're seeing cord cutting accelerating and ratings of sports going down across the board. You know, until there's kind of other alternatives that are finding these fans, you know, how do you continue to use people that are using, you know, your vMVPDs like YouTube TV and Hulu with live TV, plus, you know, traditional cable networks, to be able to drive those ratings up higher than expectations? So that's constantly going to be something I'm going to be looking at, is really that transition between fan development on the social end, but how is that driving to the core product? Because that's obviously where all the money is made, or most of the money is made, in professional sports right now.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about the next 5 years for the NFL. Commissioner Roger Goodell talks about how he wants the league to be a $25 billion industry by 2025. So that is only 5 years from now. So what do you think, you know, it's going to take to reach that number in the next 5 years? And more particularly, like, you know, the business side of the NFL from your time there. So what do you think they can implement in that time to try and reach that number?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question, you know, Nicholas, and appreciate the previous question, you know, Alex, as well. Really good for you guys as far as understanding, you know, what some of the core, you know, business questions are that the NFL is facing. So, you know, $25 billion is obviously basically about double of what they've made now. Clearly, the NFL has taken a big hit with COVID, not to your point at the top, you know, not being able to have fans in the stadium. So, with that, the likelihood that there could be full fans in the stadium by next year, I would say is highly probable, but you don't know. You obviously don't know where this virus is going to be. It might take to 2022 till you have, you know, full capacity. So that's naturally going to have something that the NFL has to reach. The other factor with that is the NFL has very high ticket prices in key markets like New York, Los Angeles, Dallas, Seattle, places that we were at the XFL and saw a value proposition there, because we saw a lot of fans that were just getting priced out of NFL games. So clearly, I think they've hit maybe not a saturation point, but I don't know how much more they can reach as far as ticket prices for the fan, especially coming out of a pandemic. So next, you're looking at, you know, the media deals that are coming up, the broadcast deals, same thing. These broadcasters have been highly impacted by the acceleration of cord cutting and not basically being able to hit, you know, revenue numbers that they maybe had projected going into the next year or two. So I think that the NFL, clearly being the top programming on television, will warrant higher rates. But what is that percentage of increase, right? Is it going to be what was expected, and is it going to help them get to that $25 billion? I don't know. I mean, I've talked to people across the board from, you know, NBC, CBS, and, you know, in ESPN, of just kind of where they are, and Fox as well. And, you know, they're having challenges. They're trying to find those new revenue streams. A lot of those networks are looking into, you know, free AVOD that you get on your Samsung TV or LG TV, because it's free programming that, you know, they could sell ads against, that they know every single person who owns a TV is going to have, whether or not they have a MVPD package or a, you know, cable satellite package. So, you know, that's something that I'm just not sure if those increases are going to go up, you know, that much as well. So then you look at, you know, merchandise, and I think there is a huge opportunity there, especially with more social carts and ways to work with social media to drive engagement and drive further, you know, retail purchases among avid fans. I think that's a huge opportunity for the league. So I think everything comes down to, you know, customer retention management, or CRM, and how do you build that database to be able to leverage more and more money out of your existing fan base? I think everything that the NFL is going to be able to do for increasing revenue is going to be that, until there's a model where you can bring in more 18 to 34 year olds who are just not in that cable TV, satellite TV universe. So I think, you know, retail is definitely going to be a big play for the NFL. And then eventually, I think the biggest thing that they have up, and I think it's up in the next year, is what does the NFL do about the Sunday ticket? I think it's a huge opportunity to obviously be able to get more and more avid fans in the database if the NFL decides to take a data share of that information and be able to better maximize that, you know, that database to drive more incremental revenue. So to me, I think it's incremental revenue overall, but then there's, you know, is there a way to do more interesting partnerships that brings in more partnership revenue as well? And that leads us to sponsorships. And I think sponsorships overall, there could be obviously more players that want to get involved with the NFL, but they are looking more for a partnership and it's just not a sponsorship. They want to make sure that the NFL is going to provide them with a key demo, but be able to do it in a way that's going to engage their fans through their own channels. Cause now every sponsor is a media outlet because they all have social media. So how do you come up with really innovative integrated marketing concepts that are able to drive incremental revenue? So I do think $25 billion is definitely a lofty goal. I don't know how attainable it is, but I definitely think it's more about, you know, how does the NFL through its, you know, league office and through its teams be able to drive more revenue? And I think clearly that's going to come through, you know, probably sponsorships, but also, you know, the retail component and being able to get fans to obviously spend more money against the NFL brand.
It's really interesting. I think we're kind of going to get a better idea of that, like you mentioned, next year and how things are going to look. But you talked about there are a lot of the different things that the NFL does in their revenue strategy. And after you left the NFL, you head over to CBS News Digital, spending some time there. Obviously, a very different world in some sense, but still, I do feel like there's a lot of crossover between news and sports. So I'm curious what that kind of sidetrack or that kind of experience, how that helped you in any way, or any of those experiences that you talked about with the NFL may have benefited you there.
Yeah, I always say to people, like, CBS Interactive and CBS News Digital was a great bridge between the NFL and the XFL. And I think why I say that is that CBS Interactive was a tech-first company. It basically had the management structure of CNET, and then CNET was acquired by CBS and basically converted into CBS Interactive, where CNET was a major component of that. So, you know, it was based out in San Francisco, but it was a tech-first company, not dissimilar from what you would see from like a Facebook or a Twitter or Google, but it also had the corporate structure of CBS. So I think it was really helpful for me to work at more of a startup or tech first environment where I was transitioning even just from day to day from working, you know, with more of a Microsoft Outlook and more of a traditional, you know, email tool to working with Slack, to working with, you know, Google Suite or G Suite. And being able to work with a lot of these new innovative tools like Asana from a project management standpoint and Jira from just an overall product management standpoint. So really got a great understanding of digital product and what it takes for it to be successful. And also, you know, when you have various digital products through, you know, connected TV devices like Roku and Amazon and Samsung, which are app live, but also, you know, through the App Store and Google Play as far as Android devices, and then also through your desktop, you know, how do you balance all those? You know, obviously you're getting, you know, consumers and viewers and visitors through all those platforms, but what makes each platform the most important, right? Or where do they kind of fit within that ecosystem and which of the platforms is really the most valuable? And I think really what you're seeing across the board through a lot of broadcasters and why you're seeing, you know, Fox going out there and purchasing Tubi and why CBS, you know, purchased Pluto TV is that, you know, OTT is so valuable. A connected TV viewer is really valuable because of CPM. CPMs are much more valuable in the ad sales space when you're looking at somebody who's watching your content on a connected TV device rather than a mobile device or desktop, because they're more likely to make it a lean back experience and they're going to spend a lot more time, you know, watching your content on that device. So you're going to be able to serve them a lot more ads. So I think that that's why you're seeing a lot more entities get involved in connected TV, because it's a lot stickier and you're going to get a chance to be able to drive more ads on the digital, in a digital standpoint, but you also get all of the valuable tools that you get from traditional digital media. So, you know, you can measure, you know, how long a person spends in a particular session. You know, do they click on any, you know, VOD content after watching the live stream? How long do they spend on the live stream? So all of this, you know, digital media infrastructure that you get through an Adobe Analytics or a Google Analytics all kind of is involved in connected TV. and you're getting the most valuable ad rates for it. So I think that's why you're seeing, even though all of the digital channels are very important, the valuable assets are really with connected TV, which is why you're starting to see more and more media companies going into the space, whether they be traditional publishers like the likes of USA Today, or whether they be traditional broadcast companies like, you know, CBS, and as part of, you know, the broader Viacom CBS and ABC News Live as part of Disney.
I think that's so true, because I'm actually looking for a TV right now. Every single one I find, not even joking, is a connected TV. And then when you don't have one, life is a whole different story. So I think in my experience, that actually is true for my novel experience. So you talk about many of those different aspects of it, and then you go into the XFL, and you said that this was kind of that bridge area. You start with the XFL. This is a whole new league. I mean, I shouldn't say a whole new one. We're coming back again, the XFL, in a new way. I don't think people really understand how difficult it is to build as a marketing director, build from scratch. So what was that process like? Take us inside day one, you're at the XFL, and where you go from there.
Sure. I think you hit the nail on the head with difficult. It is a challenge. And I think the biggest challenge is just things you take for granted when you're in existing companies. You just can't take anything for granted when you're in a startup atmosphere. And I think the first thing is just creative assets, like stuff to work with. We didn't have players. We didn't have a football until Thanksgiving that we released. We didn't have helmets and uniforms till a couple of weeks afterwards, you know, when we released those in December. And we didn't have any footage of our players actually on a field till minicamp in December, and really not even having any scrimmage footage that we could use until January during our training camp. So clearly we had a lot of deficit of assets and creative. So you have to be very, very innovative in what you do. And luckily we had, you know, an amazing team that I worked for with Scott Parker, who had come from ESPN and really built out their college football marketing strategy with the SEC Network and ACC Network and College Football Playoff, and was able to bring that great brand excellence to what we were trying to do. And then on the creative side, we had David Hilton, who had worked most recently at William Hill, kind of in this sports betting landscape, but then also had put in a lot of years at WWE and Maxim. So really knew what, you know, accomplished photography looked like, and also video assets and how to really make things look very polished. So we knew that we needed to really rely on any sort of assets that we had. But also with that, a lot of what the messaging was we just need to educate people on what the XFL was. We were in October trying to sell tickets and season tickets and then eventually trying to sell single game tickets and then tickets to the kickoff game. But a lot of questions that we were getting from our team marketing directors in the field was, our fans don't know what the XFL is. They don't know that it's football. They don't know that it's starting in February. They don't know that it's professional football, or, you know, how many games are in a season. So a lot of that work needed to get done just to educate people on what the league was. And our website helped do a lot of that. But just, you know, it's almost like a campaign that you're seeing, you know, now in the political world. You consistently just have to reinforce your message and just go out there with a lot of different creatives. So, you know, as far as driving ticket sales, we were working with, you know, programmatic display and social and search, just to consistently being able to drive people from top of the funnel, from general awareness about XFL to then actually being someone who would buy a ticket. So, you know, that was definitely something that we really focused in on a league level, and just really, really challenging, because you just got to consistently be hitting people kind of with multiple forms of communication, and then getting those folks to sales reps, and then having sales reps be able to close the deal regarding, you know, ticket sales, whether they be group ticket sales or whether they be season tickets.
Yeah. I mean, I know in some of our own conversations, you went in depth about me about kind of the 2-year plan you had, that the, you know, the league was funded for the first 2 years. And really the goal was, you know, year one, really get those, that initial exposure with partners at Fox and ESPN, which really turned out to be a huge success rating wise. And then, you know, try and build that fan base that way. By year two, you can start gaining sponsors and turning a profit. So, you know, when the league shut down, did you think that it was, you know, on track, on that profitable path? Because I truly think it was, as a fan sitting on the other side, watching every week, and really seeing a great product on the field. And, you know, to me, it seemed like that first year plan was moving along rather smoothly before the pandemic hit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, agree with your assessment of kind of where we were in the 2-year plan. So first year, the main focus for us was not to drive revenue. Not that we didn't want to make money. We definitely wanted to make money. We definitely wanted to engage fans, have them buy tickets and bring in revenue for the league. But it was more about we knew that the main goal was fan engagement. And by that, it was produce a stellar product. And a lot of the credit goes to Oliver Luck on football operations, like the changes he made to the game to keep it more fast paced, to the new kickoff rule, which was a huge success, which I'm still kind of surprised that nobody's adopted yet. I'm sure it will come down the road that somebody will. But I think, just being at the NFL and seeing just the pure football operations changes that were made, the shorter time in between plays from 40 seconds to 25 seconds regarding, the play clock. These are just small things that maybe, weren't mentioned as much, but had a huge impact on making sure that the league was really successful. Another piece of that is, our broadcast partners were phenomenal. ESPN and Fox Sports were amazing. And they were able to really provide a lot of promotion for us, in the run-up to the XFL. So that was very key in fan engagement. They helped build buzz in sporting events that fans were gravitating towards in December, in January, college basketball, college football, things that were really getting audiences. And they were able to say, hey, this XFL thing is coming and you're going to want to tune in. So that built a buzz and almost like a movie-like premiere campaign that really made people say, hey, this is an exciting thing in February that I want to see. And there was a lot of curiosity. Week one, we had 4 million viewers week one for the ABC game that clearly helped us build momentum on those fan objectives. And just overall, the great job that Steve Viglione did of just, in intelligence for our team and really monitoring what our fan base was and who they were and making sure that we were hitting against our fan objectives and fan metrics. And we were, we were hitting the numbers that were unprecedented for a startup, football league, over 10 million, fans from the jump and being able to expand on that. And we thought we had a big window of opportunity to even reach more fans as we expanded in different markets, but also just within those individual markets, like New York and LA are really challenging to get any sort of new startup league kind of up and running because of how expensive those media markets are and how difficult it is to kind of break through with obviously all the competing entertainment options. But we were doing it, make those inroads with fans and being able to create a product that we really thought there was some, long legs there in really difficult markets.
Yeah, and just a quick follow-up on that. I remember when we were speaking about, just even choosing each individual city and how much thought went into growing the league and choosing those first eight teams. You had some incredible turnout in St. Louis and Seattle, some great product on the field in Houston, where the championship was going to be held. I guess even in New York, where you were talking about trying to tap into that market where, I know from, working for the Giants, there's a certain, amount of people that can get tickets or afford tickets for an NFL team in New York. But then there's that, group of people under which either can't get in because it's so hard to get in or too expensive. So, how key was choosing the correct cities and, targeting that, lower priced game to those fans, especially in those cities such as, even some of the smaller cities like St. Louis or Seattle, where the fan turnout was so high.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to your point, St. Louis and Seattle, the real key for them was just a limited amount of professional sports franchises. Like you look at St. Louis, they have, only had the Cardinals and the Blues. And at the time that we were in Seattle, they only had the Seahawks and the Mariners because the Kraken hadn't been announced yet. So, I think that was a huge advantage for us. When I look back, I'm like, that's why that was successful because they're great sports towns, but just limited professional sports options. So anytime a new team would come into the market, people in those markets are craving professional sports and really want to have more options. So there was obviously the attractable, price point. And that's why the Sounders worked really well in Seattle as well, because there just was limited options and they were able to provide an affordable option. I think that's why you're seeing the MLS go into St. Louis with a franchise, because it makes sense. And we were able to, show that model of, if you're more of a second tier sport and MLS is kind of on that fringe of first tier, second tier, you can have success in some of these markets that have limited professional sports franchises. But at the same time, we didn't want to, be in just areas like, Boise or Birmingham, and nothing against those particular cities. But when you're a startup league, it's really challenging when you have a limited population to get people to go to an event when you're expecting, you know, 10, 20,000 people to show up. So we wanted to be in major markets that we knew there was going to be eventually an audience that would materialize. So like I said, New York and Los Angeles were our two most challenging markets. And, you know, the team there really worked tirelessly to be able to get, you know, the crowd that you're able to get and the fan base they were able to get. But we felt confident because of your point, with New York and Los Angeles, with the NFL product really being highly expensive, we knew that there was, you know, fans that would never get into a Giants, Jets, Chargers, or Rams game, but wanted to go to professional football. So we knew there was an audience there. It just took a little bit longer for that to materialize as word of mouth spread and people had a positive experience with the product in venue. I think from your standpoint, Houston and Dallas, they're just football hotbeds and they can't get enough football. They support, you know, all sorts of college football teams and professional football teams in that market. So we knew that was a market that we could be successful in with providing a football product in a time period where obviously football wasn't being provided in that marketplace. So that's definitely, you know, why we saw, you know, a kind of a value in that particular market. I think if you look at the, you know, the market of Tampa Bay, the value there was, you know, we thought it was a chance to extend football again in a football hotbed. You know, a lot of college football teams they support. You know, obviously you're seeing that with the Buccaneers, just, you know, a little bit more of a better team on the field. Obviously, you know, obviously creates a lot of fandom in places like, you know, Tampa Bay and Jacksonville proved that a few years ago when their team went to the AFC Championship game. So we knew that, you know, Florida made a lot of sense for us to invest in. So, you know, those are some of the things that we looked at when we really established, you know, the various different markets we wanted to go in. I think DC was a little unique because the ticket price was pretty high for, you know, a Washington football team, but clearly now that I'm calling them Washington football team, there were some branding challenges and obviously some on the field challenges that that team was dealing with. So we saw an opportunity with DC Defenders that we can actually have a team in DC that's right by Nationals Park. That's right where obviously DC United has seen a lot of success for years, and maybe just find an element of the Washington football team fan base that might be a little bit disenchanted with both the brand and both the play on the field that might want to support something that's an alternative DC football team. So I think all of our strategies came to of, you know, is there an opportunity both short-term and long-term? And I think for basically each and every market, I think we were really successful, and I would, you know, not be surprised to see the XFL when it comes back and, in February of 2022, you know, come back with exactly the same markets.
And that's exactly where I was going to go next, because we've talked about a lot of that great work that went into the XFL and building that foundation. And like you said, it was a success, but ultimately the pandemic, like a lot of things, had an impact on that and put it to an end. And unfortunately, though, it seems like the XFL will be coming back 2022, Dwayne Johnson and his team for a meager $15 million, it seems like, getting the league, and seems like a terrific deal. What do you expect of the XFL in its return? Do you think a lot of those strategies are going to stay? And what do you think is the key this time around to being successful?
No, absolutely.
Staying successful, I should say.
Absolutely. And just to kind of preface this, like I've been, you know, completely out of the, you know, the loop of what's going on, obviously, with the new XFL. So no sort of inside, you know, understandings of what's going on with obviously, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Danny Garcia and Redbird Capital and obviously, you know, some of the entities there. I think as far as what I could see, what the challenge is, which I think is the best thing I could probably lay out based on my experience, is, you know, obviously creating a lot of buzz around that initial broadcast. So I think, you know, a broadcast home is crucial. And I think, you know, obviously Fox Sports and ESPN were phenomenal partners. So being able to potentially get back with one or both of them, I think would be really valuable for the XFL. I think the challenge is there's not as much of a novelty effect. I mean, the XFL occurred in 2001. It was a bit of a renegade brand, you know, in the best sense of the word, you know, from Vince McMahon. It came out of the Attitude Era. It had a lot of people like myself who are, you know, middle-aged and basically, you know, anywhere between 35 to 50. And I'm kind of on the lower end of that at 35 that, you know, kind of were really big fans of the Attitude Era and really liked what Vince put out there as far as a product. And I think that naturally gave some interest to people in my age group when the XFL came back to say, yeah, I want to check this out and see how this is. And I think it did really successful in its initial launch of really capturing a lot of that audience. I think our average weekly television audience was, you know, around 2 million or just under 2 million. And the XFL was outrating college basketball and NBA games with zero rights fees. So I definitely think that even if they can keep to that kind of, you know, 1.5 to 2 million audience, that's extraordinarily valuable. I mean, you're looking at MLB you know, postseason games and NBA playoff games getting similar audiences. So I definitely think there's value if they can get that television audience. I think as far as, ticketing, if they could stay in the eight markets, they have built equity. They've built equity in those markets. People know those, you know, that the XFL is going to bring high quality football. There's some already emotional connection with those names and those teams. So I think that, you know, being able to start at least with a database of people who have recently bought tickets and be able to use that database again, and based on the $15 million purchase that The Rock and Redbird Capital made and Danny Garcia, I think will be very valuable in maybe getting more people to be in as season ticket holders. I think the challenge will be, you know, single game buyers and maybe people that were going to buy a ticket, but maybe, have been hurt from the, you know, COVID and obviously the pandemic that has caused a lot of people to be out of work. And even if they're in work, to take, you know, pay cuts. So discretionary income is something that people are not going to have as much of. So I think that's going to be a challenge of really identifying, you know, past that maybe season ticket audience, who is some of those ticket buyers that would be interested in the XFL, but maybe don't have the financial means, because our key audience was middle class and working class. And clearly those audiences or those fans have been probably the most impacted by COVID. So I think that's another challenge. But, you know, I think the benefit that they have going for it is it's something that people really loved, and there's a fan base for it and people that want to see it come back. And I think people really do want to have more football, you know, following the Super Bowl that they can follow and they can engage with. So I think there's a lot of positives to it. I think it's more of, you know, being able to take what really works for the XFL and then being able to amplify it. And I think the one thing that The Rock can do really well is taking the successes of the content team that really were mostly focused, to their credit, on building an amazing social media department that's gotten a lot of awards this year and people saw the value. But how do you bring that more into content that's done with key partners? Like, how do you come up with a documentary series you can do with a Netflix, Amazon, HBO Max that maybe makes the XFL a really compelling story that people that maybe didn't even catch it the first time around just watch it as a documentary, or, you know, a 5-episode series similar to what we've seen with, you know, Hard Knocks or 24/7, and then make people want to tune in because they find these player stories so compelling, because it really is compelling. Like, these players, this is their last chance maybe ever at getting into the NFL. It's giving them a second opportunity to get into, you know, the preeminent form of professional football. And I think that's really compelling for fans. And you've seen the success that Hard Knocks has had over the years. And I think part of that is that, you know, if these guys don't perform in that training camp, they're gone, they're cut. And I think the XFL is a little bit of that as well. It's kind of another chance for these players that are on the edge of pro football to get another chance to make it. And, you know, you see with NFL Europe, you know, Kurt Warner won a Super Bowl, his Hall of Famer. Jake DeLone made a Super Bowl. They got their start in NFL Europe. And I think the XFL, if it's successful over the next few years, is going to have some of those success stories as well. And even from the first iteration in 2001, you know, you saw Rod Smart, you know, make it into the NFL as a running back. And now you're seeing PJ Walker, you know, as a backup in the NFL and getting that opportunity as well. So, you know, I think that those stories will eventually get to a point where there is a starting running back or a starting quarterback that started at the XFL that's able to find real success at the NFL level.
Absolutely. And thanks for all your insight on, you know, your career. NFL, XFL is really fascinating. And I want to kind of wrap it up with the two last questions. One of which I know is something you do a lot of and you've inspired me to do a lot of, which is networking. You are constantly, you know, calling all different, you know, executives and people at, you know, across all different industries in sports and different companies as well. So I just want to like hear a little bit more about like what helps and inspires you to network so much, because I know, you know, you influenced me and really helped inspire me to network as much as I have this past summer when, you know, my options and opportunities for the summer didn't work out. So what kind of inspires you to do as much networking as you do?
Yeah, no, I came to networking really late, and it was more transitioning from, you know, the NFL to CBS Interactive during that time period. And now obviously the transition from the XFL to whatever, you know, will be next for me, whether it's in sports or media. And I'm kind of actively looking in both spaces. Mm-hmm. But I really think networking is very similar to investing. And you always hear about compound investments, and you invest money and that makes money for you. And then you take that investment and take those gains you made from that investment and invest it in other investments. And just over time, over a long period of time, you look back and you're like, wow, my money really that I invested made a whole lot more money for me. And I have a lot more wealth today because I did sock that away. I did put that money away. I did have that money go to work for me. And I feel like networking is like investing in your career and investing in your professional success. The more conversations you have is going to lead you to another valuable conversation, which leads you to another valuable conversation. And I think it's going to lead you to eventually a great destination. And I don't think I've necessarily seen the wealth yet from the networking, to be quite honest with you, but I've seen the where that can lead me down the road. Just now in this experience, like almost every interview I've gotten is from networking. Like every single one I've gotten is from networking. So, and that's just for this particular role, but I haven't had the opportunity in my career to be someplace, you know, 4 or 5 years and really be looking to transition and have a little bit more of a time period to, while I'm still in a role, to, you know, have an opportunity to really say, okay, I love what I'm doing now and I want to be here if I can make it work. But also I'm kind of looking to see what that next opportunity is as well. And I think what's really valuable is the more people you know, they're going to reach out to you too. They're going to, as you get higher in your career, that's kind of the way it works. And I'm kind of at that level now at director level where I'm still in mid-management. But as you get to that VP, senior VP, you know, EVP level, when you get to that senior leadership role, you know, those roles are usually filled by people reaching out to you and being like, you know, Kenny, I've seen you've done great work here. I think this is going to take you to the next level. You should really consider joining this. And I think the more people you have in your network and the more champions you have for you, the more likely you're going to get really good opportunities that come to you. And I think if you don't network, you just don't get the best opportunities that come to you. And I think it took me kind of going through this 2-year period to really learn that and to really put myself in the best position. So I tell people all the time when I'm networking with them, I'm like, they're like, Kenny, you know, why are you networking with me? You clearly know we're not hiring anybody. We just laid off our staff. And I'm like, I'm not networking with you for the role I'm going to get in 3 to 4 months. That's going to be with a sports or media company that, you know, we'll have an opportunity and that's going to give me a great chance to build on everything I've learned from the NFL, CBS Interactive, and the XFL. I'm networking with you because I don't know where this conversation is going to lead or where you're going to go. But the more people I know around the industry, the more I'm going to make sure when I'm ready to move on from this next opportunity I have, I'm going to find a great another opportunity to grow myself. And the more I grow, the better chance I have to get into senior leadership and the better chance I have to move up within a company. So I feel myself very fortunate to have gone through the experience I've gone through the last 2 years. It's been a little bit of a winding road, desert, whatever metaphor you want to use. But you learn a lot in those time periods. You learn a lot when you're forced to learn. And it's kind of forced me to learn a lot about myself, learn a lot about my craft and marketing, and learn a lot about my industry. And I feel really fortunate to have gone through that. So, you know, Nicholas, as we've had conversations and as your audience listens to this, you know, that's the most important thing you could do. Get out there, let people know what you've done, but learn a lot more about what they're doing. And I think you're going to find that you're going to get a lot more opportunities, even if you're at your level trying to find that kind of first job in the industry, you know, from a full-time perspective, or if you're someone like me, who's kind of starting over again, you know, 12, 13 years of my career, trying to figure out what's next. I find these periods to be really invigorating in what I'm in now. Yes, I'm not working. I'm without a job since the XFL, you know, obviously went into bankruptcy, but it gives me the chance to kind of learn more about myself again, see what's out there, and also brush up on my skill set. So these type of periods, I think, are really impactful in providing a lot of professional growth.
Absolutely. And I love that analogy of, you know, the investments where, you know, you put more in and then it grows from there your entire network. I think that's a great way to sum it up. And then last question, just, you know, what is something you learned in your career that made you successful in sports business?
I think when you look at sports, and I'll kind of take it sports and I'll take it business and kind of use them separately, but they're kind of all about the same word. And that word is passion. And unfortunately, like, sometimes passion is lurked at as being aggressive or being overly concerned about things, or, you know, just being so passionate that you don't see the forest past the trees. But I think through this time period, especially over the last 2 years, I've truly learned what it means. And passion comes from, what do you care about? Like, what do you get up every day and interest you? What are you curious about? Like, what, and you, that's going to lead you to what you want to make a difference in. Like, if you're consistently looking at, okay, I really care about X, Y, and Z, you should be working in that industry. You should be working in that profession, because that's going to give you that fire that's very important to get through really challenging times. When we were at the XFL and we're building out, you know, 300 banners that we have to do in a day, and I'm there to, you know, God knows what hour, you know, that's, you're there and you want to make it successful because you have a passion for what you're doing. You care about what you're doing, which is really, really important. And that fire is something that you want to have, because it's going to make you that much more successful in what you do than somebody else. I think in the general business sense as well, it's having, you know, passion, but it's having purpose. Like, why am I here? Why do I go to work every day? What gets me inspired to do the work that I do? And that's also going to separate you as well. So, you know, sports business, it's a lot about that. It's a lot about passion. It's a lot about purpose. There's a lot of people that will come into sports business, and they'll come in because they're like, you know, NFL looks great on the resume, or XFL seems exciting. But, you know, unless you're willing to kind of put in the long hours and really put the dedication that's needed to be successful, you're not going to be successful. And I think also, you know, you're going to also be a detriment to the company that hires you in sports, because, you know, sports fans are the most emotional, passionate people on this planet. Like, there's nobody that cares more. I mean, you're seeing it in just look on Twitter during like the World Series, or look at it tonight during Thursday Night Football. Like, people truly care about outcomes of what happens on the field. So in order to market that, in order to work in that industry, you have to truly understand that at an intrinsic and an intuitive level. If you don't understand why, you know, somebody will, you know, potentially, you know, slam down something after a game, or someone will truly be in a depressed mood for a day after like the Yankees get knocked out of the postseason, you're not going to truly understand, you know, the elements of that fan base. So I think that that's important to understand that. And I think working in other industries too gives you a more balanced view of what makes sports unique from other forms of entertainment. And I think gives you kind of that edge too, because you broadly understand entertainment, which is what I've kind of learned too over the last, you know, 2 years, but then you understand why sports is special within that entertainment. And I think if you understand those two pieces, it's going to make you be really successful versus somebody who just sees it as a key brand or as a successful company, because they're not going to understand intrinsically what makes it successful.
Passion and purpose. That's a great way to finish this up. And we really want to thank you again, Kenny, for joining us tonight. We really appreciate all your insight and the knowledge you've shared with us.
No, absolutely. Really do appreciate the time, you know, Nicholas and Alex, and it's been a pleasure speaking to both of you. I wish you the very best with the podcast, and obviously the very best, you know, overall, as you kind of figure out what's next for you coming out of Fordham and where you're looking to kind of forge your path as you head into your careers in the near future.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Just finished wrapping up our interview with Kenny Pordon. Great to have him speak with us today. As we mentioned, a Fordham alum, really passionate both about, you know, Fordham, WFUV, football as a whole, and the sports business. You could see his passion. You can see how much he knows about the business side of football. And the way he summed it up at the end, I think, was perfect. Passion and purpose when working in sports business. I think that's a great way really to approach any job you want to work in at a college, because that's going to be the career for a lot of the years of your life and what you're going to be doing for a long time. So doing it with passion and purpose, I think that's a great message to take away from it.
Yeah, and I don't think we talk about that enough. I think there's so much emphasis that we put on other aspects of work, or particularly in sports, but passion is an essential part of it. And, you know, whether that's not just about sports, but also about marketing, you know, any aspect of the sports industry, I think it's important to have that passion. As you mentioned, he clearly shows that, so much knowledge, so much insight. And for someone like me, who isn't, as I said in the outro there, isn't invested in this industry, it's just really interesting to learn about and just to get this whole new perspective on it that I wouldn't have really had before.
Well, I think you can apply it to any job, not just sports. It can be sports media. It can be any industry. Sure. It could be the healthcare industry. It can be, you know,
anything. Yeah.
Any industry, the computer science, whatever you do in your career, you want to have a passion for and have a purpose and do well in it. I think that can be applied to, you know, really any industry you want to go into. And I think it's great that he has that passion for sports business. I know I do, and a lot of the people in our sports business club do, because, you know, it is an exciting industry, and you know, the people that work in it, they have to love it, and I know I love it, and a lot of people do, and hopefully most people do for their careers.
And he put so much time into his work with the NFL and saw a lot of tangible effects. And then with the XFL, really put the building blocks in place that, as you mentioned before, we're probably going to see those in these next couple of years as the league comes back. So many just tangible assets of things that he's accomplished and things that he's done and the passion that goes into it. And I think it's really, really incredible to see. And we wish him nothing but the best with where he goes in the future.
Absolutely. He's such a great guest to have. And, you know, we can learn a lot from him, not just about his time at the NFL and XFL, but different things about networking. I know that's huge with him, and he's inspired me to do a ton of networking. And just his overall approach at working in sports is really great. So we appreciate having Kenny on with us this week. And we're going to wrap it up with our games of the week. We always like to do this. Alex, who do you have this week?
Well, it's interesting because I'm somebody who for years now has been saying that Clemson is going to eventually lose a game. And I thought it would be in a few weeks against Notre Dame. We find out, we're recording this on Thursday night, minutes ago, that Trevor Lawrence has COVID-19, which
really?
Is very, very concerning. We wish him nothing but the best.
Wow. Yeah.
Clemson, and you also remember Clemson had a big outbreak over the summer as well, where almost half their team had the coronavirus. So now to see it at this point in the season when they're six games in, I think is concerning. And I mean, we'll see. He's not going to be playing this weekend against Boston College. That's the game I'm going to circle here because I think Boston College is a good team. And I picked that as an initial game to look at even before we found out about this news. But now hearing it, it's scary stuff. And I think it shows us that college football is not above it. And we hope he gets healthy for that Notre Dame game. But it'd be interesting to watch what Clemson looks like this weekend on the football field, and let alone what's going to go on off of it.
Yeah, sending our best to Trevor Lawrence with that COVID diagnosis. That's really unfortunate. And at first I was going to say, really, Boston College and Clemson, that's, I would think, initially, my instant reaction is, you know, Clemson's going to have their way with BC. But, you know, after this, I mean, I know they still have a very talented roster, but Trevor Lawrence is truly the gem in all of it. So our thoughts and prayers to him. Hopefully he can recover from COVID. But you're right. That does make that game a whole lot more interesting. They are at home, so at least they'll have that. But, that does throw an interesting wrench into that game. We'll definitely look at it. My game of the week is Pittsburgh Steelers and Baltimore Ravens. Top of the AFC North, probably the two of the top teams in football. The Steelers are undefeated. Ravens 5-1. That's going to either determine a tie in the division if the Ravens win, or put the Ravens two games out if the Steelers win and move on to 7-0. I think this is the Steelers' biggest test so far. I know it's a division game, but really it's going to be one of the toughest games they play this year. We know how dangerous Baltimore can be. Pittsburgh is going on the road. I think it'll be a really awesome game to watch Steelers and Ravens.
Well, there's a narrative about Pittsburgh that they haven't beaten any good teams. And last year they took down Tennessee. I think that put that to bed for a little while. If they really want to put that to bed, beating Baltimore would certainly do it.
For sure. Yep. I think, you know, even going into last season, Baltimore was considered a Super Bowl contender. They went out in the divisional round, but I think they're still in that conversation of being a Super Bowl contender. So if the Steelers end up beating them and move on to a 7-0 record, I think you need to start seriously taking the Steelers as a Super Bowl contender once again, which is, I feel like, something you say in more years more often than not with the Steelers. But that will wrap it up for us here on BSSF Sports Business Podcast. Thanks for listening, and we hope you have a great week. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Fordham Sports Biz and our new website, www.bssfordham.org. We'll see you next week.